What up, Maddie?
You know.
Ooh,
low stakes. Darnell's isn't working. They don't have a...
Actually, gee, yeah, get it together, boys. Larry's isn't working.
You know the only thing that's missing from that is, like, one of them needs to be hammered. Like, they're all... Yeah, you can always tell... You can tell that's their first drink of the day.
You need, like, the... You need the... Kelly at the wedding, yeah, like the guy's just stumbling around.
None of their
the back,
eyes are
taking
glossed,
advantage of the open bar.
None of their eyes are glossed over.
You're right.
Nobody's stumbling.
You're right.
Nobody's
it's not
whatever. Their shirts are all still tucked in. Like no one's like broken the rules of like untucking the shirt or anything.
I don't know why the obvious mocktails always jump out to me.
Yeah.
Like this, when have you ever gone to a bar and seen anybody drinking anything like that?
Or
even on a cruise ship?
I mean, I was going to say unless this is footage from. A cruise ship, which it could be.
And they were like very, whoever
because
produced
look at,
this was very
look at the
careful.
Drink this guy on the right is drinking.
Yeah, I know. It's
is this some sort of wine cocktail? Is this maybe like
prune juice and vodka?
Sangria, maybe that this guy's got going on right there. But
maybe some sangria.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's like a sangria, but yeah, it's just, we'll find some other footage. Maybe we'll get
last Ben Wilson.
Yeah, we'll find some.
More of his home videos.
royalty, we should find some more royalty-free stuff to throw on so that we can actually use it. Okay, we do have the Rocket Classic. It is the last version of the Rocket Classic. Unfortunate, because they just did a $16 million renovation of the Detroit Golf Club, which actually made the course a little bit harder, we think. We'll see tomorrow, but we think. And going to get a pretty good field here in this one as well, but it is the last one. Rocket declined their option to come back in as a sponsor for next year. And mainly they cited Kelly, which was just the spot on the calendar, the never knowing what type of field is going to show up.
Were they going to get pushed somewhere else on the calendar?
No, it's basically because of where they, because this got, you know, resituated here.
Right.
And with this kind of being leading into
the playoffs,
they're like, we're never guaranteed that the guys are going to come, you know? And so they decided, you know what, money could be spent somewhere else. And so,
I'll be honest, I didn't really read up on the reasoning for why they were bailing out. But yeah, I mean, PGA Tour, obviously the schedule is getting more condensed anyway. So some of these tournaments, you're not going to see
it. And then the one other thing that was put out too, is that the PGA Tour wouldn't guarantee them what their spot was going to be on the calendar.
Yeah.
Either.
Okay. So that makes more sense to me.
Yeah. So it's like they got shuffled around and then they still couldn't get a full guarantee, which then puts even more question marks as to what kind of field you're going to get, who's going to show up and all of that. And so,
and just running everyday business operations, right? I mean, we're talking about this renovation and it's always mainly for the club members anyways, but you know, you want to be tour level and be able to host these type of events. But if they can't commit to you of where you're going to be at in the calendar, then anytime you need to do updates to the course, anything like that becomes insanely tricky for you to figure out what time of the year you need to plan this stuff.
So what we don't know is, despite the fact that we have a lot of sample size of this tournament here, we don't know what this course is going to play like, because after that $16 million renovation, they went in and did all kinds of craziness. Every single green is elevated. They redid all the green complexes. They made them bigger. They redid the bunkers. They made two of the par fives par fours. So they're going to play a super long par fours. We hear fescue grown up, 4 to 6 foot trenches that were dug.
Trenches.
Which we still don't even know. Like,
they got rid of a pond. They filled in a pond with more grass.
Yeah, this pond got filled up with fescue. So all kinds of stuff. So
a lot of breakdown of this on Long Shots, by the way.
If you guys, I was going to say, if you guys listened to us yesterday, I mean, I will fully say we had to make some leaps here, right? We had to make some assumptions. And because right off the bat, right, winning score been in that 20-ish range, 20, 22, something like that or whatever. So we talked about this on the pod, but it's worth bringing up here. You make two of the par fives, par fours over the course of four rounds. So now you've taken 8 strokes of par away, right? So now automatically your 22 becomes 14. Then we'll see if it plays out this way. But the club superintendent comes out and says, I actually think the way with the changes to the course and the way that we've done the greens, that it probably plays 2 or 3 strokes tougher. So now if our baseline's kind of sitting in that 14, 15, 16 range, but now it's going to play 2 or 3 strokes tougher, we might have a winning score more in the 13, 14, 15 range as opposed to the 20, 21, 22. And so something to keep in mind as you handicap this, that this could play more like kind of an average tour stop than the typical birdie fest that we talk about, you know, several different times over the course of the season, because that's not, doesn't seem like that's going
to
be the case
here. Yeah, it's, I'm very, very intrigued to see how this ends up playing out. This is, I mean, I ended up seeing more video even after we did the podcast yesterday. It looks like a fairly tough test from just some of what we're seeing on camera out there from these guys warming up. So I'm intrigued, Matt. I'm not a full believer this is going to immediately turn into a super tough contest, just because we've seen it in the past every year, guys going so low. But hopefully, if you are betting this week, you listen to what Matt said. Just that simply the par fives and the par fours alone, right? That's two birdie holes that are immediately flipping to a par four. It's basically, you can just write in as a bogey hole now. I mean, you're getting half stroke under par to a half stroke over par is what you're basically looking at.
Yeah, because they're super long par fours now, is kind of how this is going to play. Now, the field we mentioned is much better. Cam Young, Chris Goddard, Xander Schauffele, Siwoo Kim, Patrick Cantlay, JJ Spahn, Wyndham Clark, Ben Griffin, Russell Henley, Jackson Koivin. You can go ahead and start throwing him in there with the elite guys. Hideki is there. Got Jake Knapp after a nice little round that he had over the week of this past weekend. So pretty good field here for the last edition of the Rocket Classic. You and I went in, talked about the stuff that we liked yesterday in the models. Mainly, I kept mine basic because I don't know how this course is going to play. So I didn't want to overthink something and try to hone in a model that I don't know for sure that I'm honing it in on the right stuff. So mine was just kind of like, can you get off the tee? Can you hit some greens? And that's basically where it was like heavy off the tee stuff for me, a little bit of distance stuff, heavy on approach. And that was pretty basic with the model.
Yeah. And it was, I still stayed pretty heavy off the tee, which I've done at this course in years past. I'm not ready to move off of that just yet until I see that. Wes brought it up. I think he factored in a little bit more. I do think the around the green play is probably going to be significantly more important here this week, which is the elevated greens, right? It's going to be harder to hold greens on approach. Balls are going to fall off. They're going to trickle off. You're going to have to play up and down from around there more. I think that's going to matter. We just say it all the time. If the scoring conditions elsewhere are so easy, how much is the around the green play really going to factor into the winner? I don't know. That's where I can't wait to see on that. But, you know, again, this course isn't going to be back next year, so we're not going to be able to learn and apply it much.
Exactly. Nothing we learn is going to be applicable moving forward. Yeah. So it'll just be in round stuff with all that. So when it was all said and done, you plug things in. What did you end up on?
Yeah, this actually ended up being fairly easy for me to bet after all of the research and kind of figuring out what we need to factor in, and which was pretty complicated. I was pretty surprised to flip open books and see, look, I and Cameron Young deserve a short shot for sure, 10-1. I was shocked to see that Chris Goddard was not the next name at most books. And getting him at 18-1, that's where I started my card. I've won twice on the year with him. He's been great. He's won three times, obviously. He's been one of the best golfers on the PGA Tour this season. Look, checks all the boxes for distance, 16th on approach in this field, last 12 rounds coming in, can score 10th of birdie or better. We've got all these par fours now, second and par four scoring. The results are back, right? T18 at the Open, T11 at the Scottish, one at the John Deere just a few weeks ago. He's played this course a few times in the past. That's another thing. I'm not really sure how much that's going to matter, right? Your history at this course. So I started my card with Chris Goddard. And look, didn't get a chance to say it on the pod, Matt. Should say it now. Complete course renovation. This isn't coming back. Yes, this is a lighter bet tournament for me this week. There's a little bit of unknowns. Whenever there's unknowns out there with courses that we're not super familiar with, it's dialed back a bit for me. So Goddard, I started with Ben Griffin, who I don't play a ton. You don't hear me bring him up often. But man, the approach game's locked in right now. You know he's one of the better putters on the PGA Tour, and a guy who does have a quality around the green game, just in case that does end up being a factor, but not something I really looked at heavily this week. Ben Griffin played him outright and played him in the top 20 market, followed up the Goddard up outright with a top 10. And then Hideki Matsuyama, the only other guy I played, three really quality finishes in a row for Hideki. That is a T3 last week and then two T14 finishes the 2 weeks before that. Wondering if he's rounding into form here, Matthew. Off the tee and the putting numbers have been great. Another guy who you know is great around the green, if that comes into play. It's just the approach that's been lacking, which is odd for Hideki. So I like the number on him out there, though. 33-1 was good enough for me.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers Game here on VSiN. Matt in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin. We're going right out to the guest line here, buddy.
Yeah.
Will Hill going to join us at Not The Will Hill over in the Twitter machine. Should have bet more podcasts and, of course, across this network of ours. Will, how you doing, buddy?
Boys, what's going on? A week or so till the Hall of Fame game. So we are getting there ever so slowly. To football season. So yeah. Excited to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
It is this time of year, every year when the juices start flowing, if you will, when I know that it's like right around the corner, that's when I'm like, okay,
I'll be real honest with you guys too, though. It's also like when I feel like it's the final troll job of the off season, when I just see Little League like stuff on the television, I'm just like, hey, good for the kids. I mean, good for the kids. I just, it's like 3 weeks or four. It's so much longer than I think it's going to be every year. I'm like, good, NFL's almost here. No, not really.
The only thing, it's gotten to the point now where since we've had these couple of kids that throw like 77 and like 78 miles an hour, I'm like, when the kids are out there throwing 64, I'm like, what are you doing? You have no chance of winning. Like, this is just skip to the team that has the kid that throws 80, and like, we know who's going to be in the final.
Plug
like,
him in the final.
Yeah, the kid that's throwing 61, it's not happening, Will. I'm telling you. I mean, just come on. Let's skip all this nonsense. We have not talked to you since the LeBron stuff dropped. And so want to get your thoughts here on not only the news, him ending up there where you thought he was actually going to go, but just the thought of now, what does Philly bring to the table? And do you think that this is what could actually put them over the top?
Over the top might be a stretch. I think in order to actually win the whole thing, and when you bring in LeBron, you bring in Jaylen Brown. Yeah. Winning the whole thing is obviously the goal. But you haven't been to the conference finals in 25 years. I think if you got to a conference finals, if you ever got to a finals, you know what? That's better than anything you would have had, you know, before without this group. I just think at the end of the day, you're going to need Embiid. And I've been making the comparison, guys. It's almost like hitting a five-leg parlay with Embiid. Healthy for the regular season, then healthy for four rounds of the playoffs. We all know how hard it is to hit a five-leg parlay. That's asking a lot. Now, could you at some point trade him for Anthony Davis, include picks? To me, that would make sense. Not that Davis is some beacon of health or beacon of trust, but he's a little bit just, you know, lighter. There's at least been some glimpses of him staying healthy through the course of a long season in playoffs. So I'd have more faith in Davis, but I think in general, it's going to work. It's almost like the Dodgers where you have so many guys, you don't need to play them every night. You can rest Snell and Glasnow for a lot of the season. LeBron can miss games and Embiid can miss games. They're going to win to me a lot of regular season games. I think there's always, when you get one of these big moves, there's always an overreaction in the market. Like, I'm not cutting in line to bet, you know, plus 380 to win the East or 9-1 to win the title. But I'll put it this way. The only team definitively better than them in the East is the Knicks. Other than that, you can squint and make a case. They're better than the Celtics, better than the Raptors, the Heat, all these other teams. I think from a game-to-game perspective, though, I don't think it's a hand-in-glove fit because it's, I don't know how much shooting it's going to be. And here's the thing. I think they're going to be an over team game-to-game because there's not a lot of defense. Embiid can't move. LeBron is 41, going to be 42. And I love how we always round up everyone's age. Everyone's always going to be a year older when you round up their age. Maxie is small. Edgecombe is small. The guys on offense want to run. So to me, I could see a scenario where we're talking about them in December and January. Oh, the Sixers are, you know, 18-5 to the over. And eventually, you know, the market's going to adjust. But I think game to game, especially early in the season, they could be an over team.
Kelly, you do round either up when you're talking about someone being old or you round down when you talk about someone being young. Like, because I remember multiple times being like, Wimby's like 15, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, so it's like you go down when it's, you're talking about how young someone is. Yeah. And they're old. Like, LeBron's 50, you know. It's like, yeah, so you go one or the other.
Yeah, he's not 50 yet. Let's calm down there. I'm with you, Will. I think it'll be interesting to see what those totals look like at the beginning of the season because, The defense is going to be a problem, and I think their easiest path to winning, at least in the regular season, and look, I think it's a very strong path to winning, is playing in transition, up-tempo, open court. So yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I want to watch 1 year of Joel Embiid, though. I really hope they don't move on from him. Okay, Will, we're getting into baseball here. Manager of the Year, one of your favorite awards, Marcus. I know there's someone that you've played before, and you still like it now.
It's the same guy. It's Groundhog Day. I think it's like the third time I've discussed this very manager at the same number. The number doesn't move. I still like it. I feel like I'm missing something here. The Pirates manager, Don Kelly, is plus 800 at FanDuel. FanDuel's really the only, we always say shop around with this stuff. FanDuel's the only market I see here with that market. I can poke so many holes in the guys above him. First off, the Pirates haven't been to the playoffs in forever. 2015, haven't won a playoff series since the 70s. They never win, kind of lovable losers. You know, the owner's cheap. The franchise has a great fan base, but they're never good anymore. If you got them into the playoffs, he would have such a strong case. And I do think they are live to get in the playoffs. He'd have such a strong case. Mattingly, the Phillies manager. All right, he's done a nice job. The Phillies are always good. The Braves managers. The Braves, outside of last year where they had injuries, the Braves are always good. The Cardinals and Marlins manager are ahead of them. I don't think those teams are going to the playoffs. To me, Kelly, these guys should not be ahead of Kelly. I'm shocked he's plus 800. I still think that is very playable, and I think that's mispriced.
I hope you win that one because I have that one from the preseason as well. So I hope that one does get home for you. But let's talk about that team today. Eduardo Rodriguez versus Jared Jones. That's actually here about 12:35 Eastern, 9:35 Pacific. A little morning baseball for us out here on the West Coast.
Let's get going. Let's do it early today. I like it when they spread the action out like this. I like the Pirates. They've swung the bats, I think, better and just more than you'd think from a Pirates team. You think of Pirates, you think of pitching, you think of schemes, but they're right there in terms of runs scored. They've swung the bats really well at home. And Eduardo Rodriguez is a major, to me, regression candidate, fade candidate. You look at the last 2 years, just his ERA, 504, 505, almost to the decimal point. His expected ERA is the same as that this year, right in that low five range. But his actual ERA in the mid twos, made an all-star game. There's a lot of hard contact in his profile. There's a lot of regression, I think, coming. I think Pittsburgh gets to him. And to me, Jared Jones, a lot of pedigree, a lot of talent, similar to all these Pirates pitchers. He's coming off the injury, so there's always a little bit of an adjustment period to getting back to 100%. But I think I got the better pitcher here. Lineups maybe a wash, maybe slight edge to the Pirates here. And that was an incredible, incredible back-and-forth game last night where the Pirates trailed 6-0, bottom of the eighth. Had plenty of chances to win it before Arizona eventually won. But I think this price is a little cheap and very much playable here for the Pirates to win.
Okay, I like it about 2 hours and 15 minutes from now. That's what I'm going to go with. Baltimore at Detroit, a fairly high-profile pitcher going in this one. Tarik Skubal on the mound for the Tigers. How are you playing this one?
Yeah, and a big game here, too, because every game for the Tigers is so important where you win, you probably take a couple steps closer to keeping them. You lose, you take a couple steps closer to trading them. It's almost like, the reverse magic number. We talk about a magic number for a team to clinch a playoff spot or clinch a division. This is almost the opposite, where two or three losses is your magic number where you have to probably trade Skubal here in the next week or so. I like the under. I talked about the under last night when I was on primetime with Femi Abebefe, and it was 8. It's 7.5 most places now. 7.5 is not 8. And if you're just giving away a half a run in baseball, that's dangerous. I'll go under 4. You can get under 3.5 at plus money. I don't like going under 3.5. I don't really want to lay the $1.60 though. It'll go under 4.5. So you can put half a unit on each. It comes out to like $1.25, $1.30 or so. I think that's a good way to play it. Rodgers, who was great last year, bad start to the season, but in 9 starts since June. So from June 1st on, he's given up more than 2 runs once. And that was a 3-run outing. Everything else, 0 runs, 1 run. He's actually been really good the last couple months. Skubal is Skubal. I think this is like 2-1 after 3. If you push on 4, to me that's such a key number in the first 5. But I think you get a well pitched game here. So under 4, we'll call it here in the first 5.
Mets and the Braves, 1:10 Eastern today. This is Sean Manaea, who the Mets didn't want to be in the rotation, and AJ Smith-Shawver making his debut, coming off of major injury for this Braves squad. What are you looking at in this one?
Over. I'm going to play over here. I think that first off, when you have a total of 8, 4 + 4 = 9. So if you get both teams to 4, obviously there's a 9th run coming somewhere. And I always fade these pitchers coming off long extended absences. And it doesn't always work out, but more times than not, it's a good practice. These pitchers just aren't sharp. They're not in a rhythm. Manaea is very hittable. Acuna is back for the Braves. So I don't love betting doubleheaders, and there is another game tonight with Sale going for the Braves, because sometimes you get some funky lineups. But to me, I don't love the fact that Soto's out, but to me, 8 is enough here. There's some meat on the bone here where you can still play the over with fading the debut, fading Manaea, and I think we go 9 or above here, so I'm playing over here. Game 1, Mets-Braves. Make sure if you're tailing, you do bet the right one.
Yeah, good call.
Will, the best single NFL futures bet a human being can make right now is what?
Oh, man. I'm talking myself into Minnesota, and I was not on them last year.
Let's go.
I just think, you know what? They somehow went over 500 last year with about as bad a quarterback play as you can get, maybe outside of the Jets. That's a really good roster. It's a good coaching staff. I know, as a Viking fan, I've said for a while now, O'Connell's a little overrated, but Flores is great. Over 5-1 to win that division, where you can kind of poke holes in those other three teams. I like the Vikings here. What could go wrong? Me talking myself and having some hope for the Minnesota Vikings.
You bet it first, Will. Give me the confidence, and I might be a lot right along with you. I like that Vikings team too.
Oh, look at Kelly Bidlin. Look at you. All right, you're a toe in. You're not all the way in, but you're a toe in.
Every division bet that Will Hill has brought up so far this year, I'm on the exact same team with him. So it's either going to be a good or bad year for me and Will.
He is Will Hill. Should have bet more podcasts at Not The Will Hill, and of course, right here on the network. Will, appreciate the time, buddy.
See you guys. Thanks.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Kelly rolling a long, heading right out to the guest line because we have a ton to talk about with Nick Whalen. That's right. You can find him right here on the network, also over on RotoWire as well. Nick, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, guys. Doing well. Talk about off air. I think we finally reached the point where we are clear to just talk as much football as we want.
As much as you want to talk, buddy. Yes. I mean, if you want to stay with us for the next hour, we'll just fire away on all of this.
We might be done with the AFC North then.
Well, Nick, before we get into some bets that you've made, all of us play fantasy football. Everyone's got a draft that's going to be coming up. Who are two guys, not to put you on the spot, but who's a guy that is getting a ton of steam that you think is justified? And who's a guy that's getting a ton of steam that you're like, hey, let's pump the brakes on this dude?
That's a great question, because we are in the middle of steam season right now, you know, especially if you're following the best ball markets, which is where a lot of sharps and just a lot of people in general are drafting this time of year before you start to get into the home leagues and the redrafts in the next month. Well, we'll start with some players I am fading. And the number one guy for me is Cam Scataboo. And like, I wouldn't say he's necessarily somebody who's flying up draft boards, but he is somebody you probably have to take in the fourth, maybe the fifth round, see him go even higher than that. And the party line for me on Cam Scataboo, guys, has been, I think he's more of a football celebrity than he is a really good NFL player. You know, I think people remember Cam Scataboo at Arizona State, and they love the story and they love the personality and the backflips. They forget that this guy is, he's an okay NFL running back. To me, he's not an elite talent. He wasn't drafted as though he's an elite talent. He doesn't play in an elite offense to me with the New York Giants. And I think there's a ton of injury risk. You know, we saw that last season. I think the way he plays, the way he prepares, it's just going to be like that through the early stages of his career. So he is somebody I am really not all that interested in. You know, at the wide receiver position, I love the player in Jalen Waddle, but we are seeing him fly up draft boards over the last few weeks. And I get it to a degree, change of scenery. Denver gave up a ton to get him. There are still plenty of Sean Payton and Bo Nix supporters out there. But I mean, this was not an overly efficient Denver passing game. I did not feel like Bo Nix really took a notable step forward in year two. And you still have a really productive now number 1A or 1B, excuse me, in Cortland Sutton alongside Jalen Waddle. So the initial cost that we were getting for Jalen Waddle 2 months ago, I was in on. The updated cost, maybe not so much.
Nick, every year, you know, there's one position or another where there is just more depth than, than at wide receiver, the running back. You got more time to address. How are you handling kind of opening rounds of drafts this year? What are the positions you really need to address early?
You know, for me, it's running back, guys. I think there's a bigger drop-off at running back than there is at wide receiver. I'm a lot more comfortable peppering wide receivers in rounds 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, all the way into the double digits, whereas I think there is more of a defined cliff at the running back spot. You know, I want to make sure I'm getting at least one running back in the first two rounds. I'm not opposed to even starting running back because of how much wide receiver talent we have. But when you start to get into running back 16, 17, 18 range is where it gets uncomfortable. That's, you know, that's where you find Cam Scataboo. That's where you're getting into Josh Jacobs, who continues to practice for the Packers, but that situation still scares me. Travion Henderson, DeAndre Swift, you know, some of these guys who are in timeshares, we don't know exactly how it's going to work out. So I don't want to feel like I have to take one of those guys and especially take them as my RB2 and then I'm starting them every single week. So receiver, as usual, is really deep. And I would also say both quarterback and tight end, I am very, very comfortable waiting on both of those positions this year. I'm not going to be the Josh Allen guy. He's going far, far and away, you know, quarterback one. I just think there are so many names who are going after pick 100, whether it's Jared Goff or Matthew Stafford, Brock Purdy is around that range. Kyler Murray, I have a ton of already. And then at tight end, some of these guys who are just boring veterans, I think have become big time values this year, led by Mark Andrews. You find Travis Kelce in that range as well. I've traditionally not been a Kelce guy, but if I could get him at pick 125, I'm more than happy to make that click. So both quarterback and tight end, I think, you know, there's a case to invest early, but to me, I would just much rather hammer running backs and wide receivers and then pick up a quarterback who could conceivably be a top five, top six guy after pick 100.
Perfect transition here into sports betting talk is you just mentioned Kyler Murray and how you've been getting a bunch of shares of him. Kyler Murray playing up there in Minnesota hasn't officially been named the starting. We all believe that he's going to be the starter there with that. And so are you buying in on this Vikings team?
I am, guys. And I say that sitting here in the state of Wisconsin, which is not a popular opinion. Now, I what I need to settle on is to what degree am I buying in on the Vikings? Am I in on Minnesota at plus 510 to win the NFC North?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going quite that far, partially because of the schedule for the Detroit Lions. I think the Lions are set up to be really, really good this season. But I do think Minnesota could finish second in that division. I will happily take the plus money on the Vikings just to make the playoffs in the NFC. And I know it's going to be an uphill battle. I think when you look around the NFL right now, NFC and AFC, I mean, I count seven divisions where at least three teams are probably going into the season expecting to make the playoffs. So I think the league is sneakily maybe deeper than it's been in a while, save for four or five teams at the bottom. And when you talk about Minnesota, I mean, obviously Kyler Murray is the headliner. Credit to the Vikings for making this feel like a quarterback competition. I don't think that's the case whatsoever. I would be shocked if Kyler Murray doesn't run away with this job. And we need to remember, I mean, the Vikings were a really competitive team. They were still a great defense. They were still making it work despite having, I would say, probably the worst quarterback play in the NFL for the bulk of last season. And it wasn't just J.J. McCarthy. It was also Max Brosmer. It was also Carson Wentz. I mean, at no point was this offense functional. So even if you're not a big Kyler Murray supporter, one, you got to remember he's basically playing for free this year. It's not like they gave him some big contract and had to make these roster sacrifices to bring him in. I think you're kind of adding him to last year's team, which still found its way into nine wins. And again, even if you don't love Kyler Murray, he's going to be head and shoulders better than what we saw at the quarterback position last year. I don't think we're talking enough about just how bad it was in Minnesota and just how competitive that team remained.
Yeah, it was very bad. It's very bad, Nick. I'm with you, man. I think you laid it out perfectly. I'm very interested in betting on the Vikings. I think they will be a bet-on team for me early in the season, game to game. I kind of want to avoid the division, too, so I'm with you. I think there might be a make-the-playoffs bet or something like that that I'll be staring at. I haven't settled on anything quite yet. There's another market that I know you just made a bet in the AFC East. Gil and I were talking a bit about these last week, these division win totals that are out there. What team did you land on and under it here with?
The Miami Dolphins, guys, under 1.5 division wins, which basically just comes down to how many times did they beat the Jets? You got two chances at it. I think that maybe they could split with the New York Jets. I know, you know, historically the Patriots have always had problems when they go to Miami. I believe the Dolphins beat the Bills in a really bizarre game where the Bills just turned it over a ton of times last year. I don't really see that happening. I think on paper, I mean, this Dolphins team is one of the worst that we've seen just roster-wise over the last 5 years or so. Apologies to Devon Achane, but the wide receiver room is completely anonymous. The defense is completely anonymous. You have a first-year starting quarterback in Malik Willis, who I think is set up to fail. And then you have a first-year head coach. Like, all the ingredients to me are here for this to be a completely disastrous season. And I think the Dolphins are ultimately okay with that. The way that they tore down the roster this offseason. So not only do I like the Dolphins under 1.5 divisional wins, but you know, if you start to look into those fewest wins markets, those, you know, last team to get a win markets, Miami's pretty appealing. You know, the Arizona Cardinals have far worse schedule to begin the year. They are touchdown dogs, at least in their first 11 games of the year, which is insane. But I think when you compare those two rosters, there's a lot more in Arizona to me. I could see that team squeaking out a couple wins that maybe they don't deserve, whereas it's going to be an uphill battle for the Miami Dolphins from start to finish.
Talking to Nick Whalen. Nick, you look at the roster, obviously the odds short shot to win it all is the Rams. And you look at this roster top to bottom. You look at the fact that maybe Aaron Donald is coming back to play alongside Myles Garrett at some point here soon as well. Outside of an injury to Matthew Stafford, the coaching staff, the personnel, the everything that we know about it, where does this team go wrong? Where are we going to be picking holes in the Rams? It's just, I look at this team and I'm trying to figure out a way to try to break them down and I just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I just said Miami is one of the worst rosters we've seen in the last 5 years. I think the Rams might be the best seen in that span. I mean, I'm totally with you. And, you know, I think we talk so much about the Garrett trade and the potential return of Donald, which I think is going to happen at some point. But we forget that this offseason began with them, you know, loading up at cornerback, which was a huge weakness for them this past season. So unfortunately, I think you said it, which is the cop-out answer is injuries, right? It's like Davante Adams. He's had kind of a history of some of these hamstring injuries. He's in his mid-30s. At this point last year, Matthew Stafford was in like a spaceship trailer on the sideline at training camp. He had kind of a best case season last year. You do wonder if that health comes around. But yeah, outside of injuries, I really, really don't see this team getting derailed. I know that's a cliche thing to say this time of year, but there's a reason the Rams have separated themselves in this Super Bowl market. I mean, plus 550 right now, you got to go all the way to 11-1 to even find the next NFC team.
I'm with you, man. I just cannot do it at all. Of course, right here on the network, Prop Points over at RotoWire as well. Nick Whalen, appreciate the time, buddy.
Anytime, guys.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Shanahan nearly lost an eye.
Yeah.
In the crash.
Pretty crazy story coming up.
Nearly lost an eye. And also, not that he, I mean, it would have come out anyway, but like, I guess good on him for manning up and saying like, no, it was my fault. These people trying to say that it was some kid's fault. He's like, no, it was my fault. Wasn't the kid's fault.
That story was really starting to spiral out of control. Yeah. And I think good on Kyle Shanahan for just getting out in front of it. Yeah, or not out in front of it, but cutting it off before it went any further.
Because you want to know why. The kid's 20. The way that we work now, that could ruin this kid's life for no reason. Mm-hmm. He's 21 years old. It could ruin this kid's life for no reason. So at least he came out and was like, no, not what happened. I was at fault, not this kid.
Now, I still have like questions. I was reading about this earlier and he was talking about how he lost the phone between the seats and that's when he was reaching down to grab it. And they're like, I'm like, read something. The police report corroborated this. I'm like, well, how would they know? Like, you can't know for sure. You just got to take his word for it still. Like,
I mean,
I'm sure he's right.
All that being said, I mean, look, I'm no 49er fan or anything, but tip of the cap to that, because realizing the gravity of the situation and how we are as a reactionary society now, like, thank you for not ruining this kid's life for no reason.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Now joining us on the guest line, Mark Borchardt. He's a pro MLB bettor over there at Base Winner over on the Twitter machine. And appreciate the time, Mark, as always. And I know everybody is really wondering here as we get 5 days away from the deadline, if this deadline is going to be consequential whenever it comes to from a betting standpoint. I know Tarek Skubal, the name that keeps getting dangled, but this Tiger team refuses to just lose and go away. And all the division is terrible as it is anyway. I mean, in your mind, is there going to be somebody that gets moved that might actually change how you view the outlook of maybe even the entire American League or National League or something like that?
Oh, for sure, Matt. I think that there's going to be some killer trades. The problem as a handicapper is they're probably going to be right on the last day. So they make it to August 3rd this year, which really puts a wrench in the monthly win totals market. And I would be remiss if I didn't come on, because Gil and I talk about it quite a bit. Congratulations to a Mr. Voice of Sports Betting, Gil Alexander, for 80-1 hit on Boston. And I did the math. I think that gives him like 15 free years. So hopefully,
that's a big one,
hopefully
yeah.
hopefully we're both around in 15 years because we're getting up there in age to see. I hope he hits it before then, but he's got 15 free years, you know? So anyway, what a cool deal for him. And it's really exciting for me, going on the show and talking about these monthly wins to just see how wonderful Boston did, despite for me, like my ratings for Boston, not the greatest. So anyway, yeah, I think that there will be some big moves. I just don't know if it's going to be in time to handicap that August win total market. So it's probably really tough. And I noticed they're not up yet. It's probably really tough to handicap that market from a odds maker standpoint. And I think, you know, as far as Scooble goes, I think the Tigers would be not smart if they don't get a lot for him, and perhaps the Cubs, just based on my projections. And I'm pretty high on Cleveland. I think that's maybe a controversial to some baseball hipsters, but I really like Cleveland. I think their value in the playoffs and the division markets, Matt.
Yeah. Is there a team or two, Mark, that you're just, whether it's monthly wins, whether it's other futures bets, whether it's just kind of day-to-day betting, what you're thinking a week or two from now with these teams, are there a few teams that you've just got kind of pushed off to the side of, I'll wait and see on this team. I'm going to take a break either from betting them now or not considering them in futures markets at all?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kelly, because not only that, are you going to pull the trigger on some of these teams? And like where I'm showing value on Houston in the division market. I have a 46% chance to win that division, and they're way better than 46% from an odds standpoint. Cleveland, I mentioned too. So you got to think, well, is this team going to deal anybody first of all? And then you got to think, well, are they going to receive anybody? And I think that both those teams that I just mentioned, Cleveland and Houston, are pretty neutral, but I'm showing real good value with them. So I would say, pull the trigger. I have Houston, a 46% chance to win that division. So +116. And then you got to wonder, well, is Texas, Seattle going to do anything? But I think that's a fairly neutral projection. And then with Cleveland, I've got them, I think they were like -135 to make the playoffs, and I've got them at -280. And I think that if anything, Detroit's going to get rid of their guys. The White Sox, I'm not too high on either. And then I wanted to talk about this guy. Sorry to jump in, and I'm kind of all over the place with my ADHD today. So I love it.
Let's do it.
But I wanted to talk about the AL Cy Young market, particularly Gavin Williams at 60-1. And I thought that was really, I mean, first of all, the reason he's coming high on my radar is he's up to number three on my personal ratings. And so I dug in a little bit better. Four straight games with double-digit strikeouts. I don't think you see that a lot. And then if you go to the XFIP number on Fangraphs, you've got Schlittler at 2.86. He's a heavy favorite. And then Gavin Williams, 2.88. Now, if that's not enough, you look at the counting numbers, which are very important. And I know Sheehan's come on the show, and he's right about this. Innings pitched and strikeouts, just from a counting sum standpoint. And the second guy in baseball behind the Miz is Gavin Williams in total strikeouts. So you've got all that going. 60-1, I think that's, I want to say that it's a good roll of the dice, but it's a good roll of the dice, Matt.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that race is not over either, for sure. What do your numbers say about these middling National League teams? So like, you know, someone's got to make the wild card. And it's like, we got the Diamondbacks, we got the Pirates, we got the Nats, we got the Padres, we got the Marlins, we got the Cardinals. I guess to a lesser extent, the Reds are kind of a week long winning streak away from being in the mix as well. Are there any of these teams you feel like you are higher on than the market, or maybe on the flip side of that, like definitely think that they're going to fade over the second half here?
Oh, for sure. I'm down on Pittsburgh, and believe it or not, the Diamondbacks, who I've always liked, and I think that they're overvalued in the market, I guess, due to their overpriced, I guess. And then the Nationals, I have them with a 43% chance to make the playoffs. So +129. I think they're 7-1 the last I checked, and it's really bolstered. That's a offensive rating bolster. Mm-hmm. Fielding's middle, 15. Offense, 7th in baseball. And that I guess that would be controversial to some. I think that they're leading the National League, at least, in runs scored. So I think the Nationals probably a little bit undervalued in that particular market.
Yeah, like that. Mark, I know you had a couple bets for today we'll get to, but wanted to touch on one awards market. Manager of the Year, popular on the show today. Thoughts in the AL and the NL for you?
I did, because not because I want to throw shade on Will, because he does a great job. But I thought, you know, he's talking about Pittsburgh, and I'm thinking, well, wait a second. Arizona's higher than Pittsburgh in the standings. Arizona's dealt with injuries to Marte's been out, Carroll's been out. Corbin Burns, who lives down the street from me, he's out. And I don't know if he's coming back. But so they've overcome quite a bit of injuries. They're ahead of Pittsburgh in the standings. They have the starting pitching's lousy. They're bottom 10 by my ratings. But yet, they're still, if the playoffs were to start today, guys, they're in the playoffs. So Lovello at 25-1, I think that's how I would go with that, Kelly. But you know what's funny is you do things in the prism of your bet, and I've been having that bet all year. So Lovello was the start of the year, and so you kind of see it from your prism. But I'm looking at it and going, well, I think at 25-1, he's better than the other guy from Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah. Well, Will, don't worry, Will and Matt are looking at it the same way, because they've both been on Don Kelly the whole year.
Yeah, mine was just at preseason. Yeah, and I'm just rolling with it, like trying to will it into existence.
It's so crazy that's what we all do. So, all right. Yeah.
Talking to Pro Bettor Mark Borchard. Mark, we got the Rangers on the road at the Rays today. This is Mackenzie Gore going up against Ian Seymour. What do you like in this one?
Yeah, Seymour's getting the bulk start, and I like him. He's 12th by my ratings. And then offensively, I think we got a big edge here. I've got Tampa Bay the way they're comprised at 12th, and then Texas the way they're comprised, I've got him at 27th. So a big edge there, a little bit of an edge in the bullpen for the Rays. I've got them 15th in baseball versus a Rangers bullpen that's 21st in baseball. I think this thing should be priced about -180. So you're getting pretty, really good value on this Tampa Bay team today. Of course, yesterday have you ever done this, Matt or Kelly? You go against Cal Quantrill. I mean, the guy's terrible sabermetrically, and he had his best start of the year. So they're off that loss. I think they're going to rebound today. Tampa Bay is a good play.
All right, like it. Then one more for you. The base winner parlay of the day. What do you got for us today, Mark?
Got to have a base winner parlay. And it's real blue blood, and it's real simple. It's Detroit and the Yankees. And we talked about Cy Young candidate Gavin Williams. Well, these are the two guys ahead of him, Scooble and Schlittler. And you put them in a parlay, and it pays +170. Gosh, how could you go wrong with this, guys?
There it is. There I go. Absolutely love it. He is Mark Borchard at Base Winner over on the Twitter machine. Mark, appreciate the time, man, and good luck.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good day.